Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Cashatt. I'm your co-host, and joining me in the conversation today is Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you. Well, I would imagine that most of our listeners know what it's like to have far more projects and requests than time. You know anything about that, Michael?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there was a time when I felt like, my friend Gary Smalley used to say, I felt like a frog in a freeway with his jumper stuck. Just so much stuff to try to manage.
Oh, I love Gary. That is the best. That's awesome. Well, about once a week, if not more, someone asked me to either meet for coffee or for lunch or for an online meeting or a quick phone call. Quick, I mean, quote unquote, quick, right?
Yes, exactly.
And although my heart wants to say yes every single time, and the truth is I really struggle with this because I truly want to be able to say yes to every request, but the reality is I can't, probably more so now than ever before. I literally cannot, both for family reasons, health reasons, business reasons, all of it. So although I know those no's are necessary, I still feel a lot of guilt about it. And occasionally I have found that people are very hurt or disillusioned in me because of my refusal to get together. So my question for you, Michael, is do you struggle with this, you know, this whole idea of balancing your limits of time with the requests that come in and your heart's desire to be a yes person?
Totally. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, I genuinely want to be helpful. Mm-hmm. I know how much it has meant to me throughout my life and career when people have given me some advice or given me a resource or spent some time with me just to talk through something. So I know it can be helpful. I think the other thing is I you know, and this really is more self-centered. I don't want to be perceived as somebody that's aloof, mm-hmm. or somebody that, you know, thinks they're now too important, you know, yes. to help other people. And so in some ways it's more about me than it is about even the other person. I think sometimes mm-hmm. I kid myself into thinking, it's about them, but it's really about how I want to be perceived.
Yes.
So yeah, I struggle with it. And, I get systems in place. We're going to talk about some of those today. I struggle with it less today than I ever have, but I still struggle with it from time to time. And I still get myself in a pickle from time to time because I commit to something I shouldn't have committed to. And I'm out of bandwidth to try to do it.
Well, and I happen to be a fan of pickles, but let's just say that I've gotten into a pickle way too many times. If you talk to my manager or my assistant or any of them, they would tell you that I might be the queen of pickles because I am constantly overcommitting myself to things in my desire to be accessible. And I can't follow through in many cases. And so this conversation today is actually going to be, let's just call it a self-help session for Michelle, because there may be thousands of people listening in, but you can totally maybe save my life today.
Good. I hope so. I bet we can.
All right. For those of you listening, if you're going to live according to a realistic schedule and maintain margin for your most important priorities, which is what we all want, right? You and I must make some tough decisions about accessibility. The more successful we become, and this is what we're aiming for, we want to have some kind of success in our business and personal life, we're going to have to become less accessible in many ways. Otherwise, we'll end up cheating the relationships and projects that matter the most to us. This all goes back to the fact that we are a limited resource. We can't do it all. So today, Michael, you're going to give us 7 steps to being more intentional about how we spend our time.
Yes. And I want to start by giving credit where credit's due. The first time I began to think about this, you know, in sort of a systematic way, was when I heard Andy Stanley talk about this very point, mm-hmm. that the more successful you become, the less accessible you must become. And that was like the first time somebody had ever given me permission that I could say no and feel good about it. So what I've done is I think I've taken what he shared and unpacked it a lot more. And, you know, I've lived with this now for a long time, But I do want to give credit to Andy and his leadership podcast, because he does a great job there talking about this type of thing.
Yeah, I've heard him talk about this subject as well, and he's very insightful. And I love, kind of like you said, I love the permission that he gives to us to make the hard choices that we must make. We have to. There's really no way around it. So we have 7 simple steps for how you can become less accessible, which again is a necessary process for all of us as we grow more successful. What is that first step?
Well, the first step is to acknowledge that your resources are finite. And all of our resources are finite, but some are more replenishable than others. Mm-hmm. But one that is absolutely not replenishable is time. Mm-hmm. You and I have 168 hours a week. Fortunately, for most of us, we get to choose how we're going to spend that time. Even if we're going to a job that we don't particularly like, we're still choosing that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't typically have slavery in this country anymore, thank God. Mm-hmm. So we're not forced to do something against our will. But our time is a finite resource. But I would also say that similar to that, our energy is a finite resource. And I happen to be an introvert. And I'm very aware of this. You know, there are some people that as extroverts, they draw energy from being with people and from the stimulation that can bring. Mm-hmm. But I'm the opposite. So there's a cost to being involved with people. And it does take time to replenish that resource. But to acknowledge that your resources are finite, to me, Michelle, is where you've got to start. And I think most of us have. I'm just going to be honest. I think a God complex.
Yes, you know, I agree with that.
We think that either somehow we ought to be able to be omnipresent so that we don't have to say no to anybody, whether it's somebody, you know, asking us to make cookies for our kids, mm-hmm. you know, birthday party or whatever at class, or it's taking the kids to the soccer game, or it's doing that extra project at work, whatever it is. We think that we can be omnipresent, or that we think that we can be, you know, what's the other word I'm looking for? Omnipotent, you know, all powerful. Uh-huh. That we've got all the resources, including resources of energy, that we can use. And it's just not true. We're finite.
Yeah, I love your mention of the God complex, because I do think that we think of ourselves as saviors at times, or that we should be, even if we don't mean to think that way, that we have to dive in and fix and save everything. And it's just not, it's first of all, not true. And second of all, not possible.
Yeah. And we're not the only resource that's out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't save every person who's poor. We can't, you know, save every person who needs counseling. You know, we can help some, mm-hmm. but we're not going to help all. And we just don't scale because we're finite.
Absolutely. And okay. So that first step then is to acknowledge that your resources, all of your resources, are finite. And in many cases, like you said, they're not renewable. So time, you cannot get any more time.
And that's right.
And energy, no matter how you try to preserve it, it will deplete and require you to slow down and replenish. That's just part of it. All right. What is the second step here to becoming less accessible and thus more successful?
The second one is to determine who needs access and who doesn't. This requires you to intentionally discriminate. Now, by discrimination, I don't mean that in a racial context, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm not going to give the same access to someone who's not in my family that I do to those in my family. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids don't get the same access as my wife. My grandkids don't get the same access as my children. Mm-hmm. The people in my company don't get the same access as my family. And it works like that as a mm-hmm. series of concentric circles going out. People that are my dear friends are going to get a lot more access than people that are merely acquaintances. You know, I want to be kind. I want to be fair. I want to be all those things to everybody. But I got to be realistic, is that not everybody needs the same level of access to me. You know, there's a lot of people that request my help that don't require me to actually sit down across the table over a cup of coffee and provide it. Because there's sometimes the best resource for them, and the one that does scale, is I can point them to a blog post. I can point them to a podcast. Mm-hmm. I can even point them to a paid product, or even to a competitor's product or somebody else's resource that'll actually do a much better job solving their problem than I will. So not everybody needs access to me, and they certainly don't need access in the same way. And I think that we have to realize that truth and embrace it.
You know, I've too often made the mistake of, well, let's put it this way. Let me back up. We're talking about who determining who needs access. And if you would ask me, I'd say hands down, my husband gets primary access, my children, yep. You know, all of that. And yet so many times we're caught up in our, whether it's our business or our projects or whatever, and we kind of shift and switch around the accessibility. And we'll give someone who we may have only met once, that's an acquaintance, access to an hour of our time over coffee, and our children haven't seen us all day long. And, you know, that sounds so mind-blowing and horrific, and yet I've caught myself doing it countless times.
Yeah, because you're forced to choose. And unfortunately, if you're a people pleaser and if you don't think this through carefully, you can give all your time to the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
Marie Forleo talks about this with, she has an email template that she uses. We'll talk more about that later. But she says, you know, somebody asked her for coffee and it's an acquaintance, somebody she doesn't know. And she says, you know, I'd love to spend time with you. That's my heart. But the truth is, I hadn't seen my mom in 2 weeks. And if I don't have time to see mama, nobody else comes in front of that.
Yeah. It's so true.
And so I think that's kind of how you have to look at it.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're giving more time to people that are outside of your family, and this really happens to people in ministry and in the helping professions in particular, where they, I don't know if they're guilted into this or they have a perverted sense of their own call or their role in it, but they end up, and I'm probably going to get email for saying that, but I don't care. I think if we're not careful, we end up giving our best time, our best energy, our best thinking to the people that are not closest in to us. And if you're in ministry, I want to say this to you. Jesus gave his best thinking, his best time, his best energy to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else came after that. You know, and you see him ministering or teaching the multitudes, but that's not where he spent the bulk of his time. It was mm-hmm. to those 12, and those 12 turned the world upside down.
Absolutely. Such good advice. Okay, so first, acknowledge your resources are finite. Second, determine who needs access and who doesn't. And this is where we intentionally have to discriminate and maybe even just write down so we get really clear on who gets primary access. And like you said, drawing circles so we see who's closest and then go out from there. Okay, what is the third step to becoming less accessible?
I think the third one is to take practical steps to limit your accessibility. So for example, I have 2 email accounts. I have a public email account that I share with people that are outside of my inner circle. And then I have a private email account that my team has, that my closest friends have, that my family has. And so that gets straight to me. The public account, those emails, which I get about 400 email, maybe more than that now, but last time I looked, about 400 email messages a day. You know, there's no way I would spend all day, every day combing through that. Mm-hmm. But I have people in my customer service department now that they go to those. And occasionally something will bubble up to me. But if they can answer the question, they deal with it. We'll talk more about this in the next point. But to have 2 email accounts is hugely helpful. Similarly, it's also helpful if you're a public person or you're building a platform, to have 2 Facebook accounts. Or if you're in business, to have 2 Facebook accounts. One being a public account where fans can come and follow you and, you know, keep up with you and all the rest. But I reserve my personal Facebook account for my friends and for my family. And so there's about 120 people that I'm friends with, and I get friend requests every single day,
mm-hmm.
and I just decline them because that's not what that account is for. I have a public page for everybody I don't know. And similarly, and I'll just give you this last third example, is I have 2 phone numbers. So I have my private phone number, my cell phone number, you know, mm-hmm. you've got it. My family has it, a few close friends, all my team has it, but very few people have that number. I have another public number, and we use a service called Grasshopper, which basically allows you to have, look like a big company when you're a small company.
Okay.
So you've got public numbers, people call it, and uh-huh. then you get emailed to you messages from there, but you can go to Google Voice
uh-huh.
and you can create your own your own phone number that you can use with people that are not people that you want to have your private phone number. So those are some practical strategies.
Well, I have to tell you, so we talked about this subject. I don't remember when we talked about this, maybe a year or 2 ago. And I've been holding out on this whole email thing. So my email has been public. It's been on my website. I only had that one email. And I've been holding out because I really want to personally respond. And so you and I have talked about this because I love the idea of being accessible and connecting. Well, as of 2 weeks ago, you have converted me because I just set up a private email and now my assistant is dealing with my public email because the reality is exactly what you're saying. It just wasn't scalable anymore. There was no way for me to personally keep up with all the emails and requests that came in. And so I've just made that transition and it's quite freeing, I have to say.
I'm proud of you. And I want to just say too, that it's actually a more other-centered solution. And here's why. When you're personally answering all that email, those messages could sit in there for days till you get to them because you're just overwhelmed.
Weeks in some cases, which okay. I'm embarrassed to admit. But when they pile up and if I'm traveling or whatever, it can be a ridiculous amount of time.
Yeah. And so that's not accessible. That's kind of creates the illusion or maybe the delusion of accessibility.
Are you telling me I'm deluded? Is that what you're
saying?
You were,
but thankfully you've come to the light. But yeah, So, when you have an assistant handling all that public email, people get their answers that'll really be helpful and they get them faster than if you were doing it all yourself.
Absolutely. So I am looking forward to this, and this has been a big means of freedom for me and freeing up time that I can then use to connect with those relationships that are most important. So, okay, we've talked about the first three steps. What is step number four?
Step number four is to make a list of common requests. Now, I'm going to tell you what to do in the next step after our break, but I do want to tell you that you don't get an infinite number of requests. Now, you think about it. You probably found yourself answering the same requests over and over yep. and over again. You know, you have a business where you coach speakers. Mm-hmm. You're an author. I don't know what all you're doing. You got a ton of stuff going on. I know you do consulting because uh-huh. I've talked to some of your very ecstatic, satisfied customers.
Thank you.
But they're asking questions about fees. They're asking questions about what a consulting session looks like. How do they get started? All that. But the important thing in this step is to make a list of those requests because mm-hmm. there's a finite number. And I'm going to tell you what to do with those after the break. But just start tracking these, whether it's email or phone or in-person requests. I promise you, there's a finite number of requests. I'm going to teach you how to dispatch them with greater ease and greater speed than you've ever thought possible.
I love it. You have me completely hooked at this point, I just have to say. So just so you know, I'm not going anywhere during this break because I just can't wait to see what you're going to say. All right. Well, before we continue this discussion on if you want to be successful, be less accessible, and the seven simple steps to get you there, you have a free resource that you want to share with your listeners, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hear from people all the time, regularly, who feel overwhelmed, burnt out, overworked. And the truth is, work exhaustion is an epidemic, and it's stealing our most precious commodity, which is time, and it steals it away from us. So I've put together a free ebook called Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week. I love that title. But if you feel like you're not getting the most important things in your life done, I've outlined some effective strategies in this ebook that you can use to be more productive, find more free time, and feel better about your week. And to get it, it's free. All you have to do is go to michaelhyatt.com/10hours to receive this resource as a complimentary bonus for signing up for my newsletter.
I love it. 10 hours.
10 hours.
There's so much that you and I could do with an extra 10 hours every week. And all you have to do to get this ebook, correct, is to go to michaelhyatt.com/10hours. Again, that's michaelhyatt.com/10hours and sign up, correct?
That's right. And all you have to do is enter your first name and your email address, click submit, and then you can download this free resource for free. Did I mention it's free?
Free. Free.
Yes, free.
I was just going to mention that because that's a big deal. I love free stuff. I'm all about the free.
My favorite price.
Exactly. Thank you, Michael. I love that. And I think all of us can benefit from an extra 10 hours a week. And I know you well enough to know that those tips that you're going to give us are going to be easy to apply and they will definitely deliver what they promise. So I hope all of you who are listening take advantage of that. Again, it's at michaelhyatt.com/10hours. Now we're going to return back to today's episode, which is all about how to be less accessible, simply because if you want to be more successful, you're going to have to limit your accessibility to others and be intentional about it, frankly. So far we've talked about the first four of seven 7 steps. So I'm going to recap now for those of you who are listening. Number one, acknowledge your resources are finite. You don't have unlimited resources. Number two, determine who needs access and who doesn't. You need to be intentional about those who absolutely need access to you and those who don't. Number three, take practical steps to limit your accessibility. This involves email, Twitter, Facebook, phone. You might need to have separate accounts for all of those things, some for private and then others for public use. And then the fourth step that we've talked about is to make a list of common requests. There are not an infinite list of requests that come in for you. I bet if you took a few minutes to think about it, you could make a list of maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 requests that are very common that you receive on a regular basis. And now we're going to move on to step number 5, in which Michael is going to tell you what to do with those lists of common requests.
Yeah, step number 5 is to decide how you will respond to those requests. And what I'm really talking about is creating a template kind of answer to those requests. So once you've got the list, and when I first did this exercise, I think I came up with 15 or maybe it was 17 requests. And then I put them in sort of rank order. So what was the most common request? Mm-hmm. What was the second most common? And so on. And what I found is that when I was responding in a one-off kind of fashion to those, some days I'd feel a lot of energy, I'd feel really helpful, and I'd give somebody a really thoughtful, thorough response. Other days I might be pressed for time, I might be tired, I might be in a foul mood, whatever it was, but I'd just kind of dash off something quick and it wasn't that helpful. So what I said was, I'm going to start with the most common request and I'm going to write the single most helpful response I can give to that person. So where I'm going to affirm them in the request, I'm going to give you kind of the pattern and then I'll give you an example. I'd affirm them in the request, then I would point them to some resources, and then I would affirm them again at the end. So for example, one of the requests that I always used to get because I was in the publishing business and I seemed to gather all these author friends or acquaintances and they wanted me to review their book proposal. And they would ask me, they would just send me an email, hey, could you review this? You know, I'd really be so grateful if you take a look at it. Well, the truth is I don't have the time to do that. But that was a very common request. And sometimes I'd be irritated and I might say, no, I don't have time to do that. And sometimes I'd try to be helpful or I would agree to it. This is the worst. I would agree to it. And then I would be like, you know, slapping myself in the face going, what were you thinking? You don't have time to do this.
Because you're in a pickle. That's a pickle.
Another pickle example. So what I said was, no, I want to actually be helpful here. So I'm going to write a response. As if I were sitting over a cup of coffee, what would I tell that person? Mm-hmm. Well, in this particular case, I've got a blog post that I'd written that's basically sort of my advice to first-time authors. And so I would point them to that. It's a free resource. Then I would say, okay, then I have a paid resource. It's not very much. It's $20, but how to write a winning book proposal. This is the counsel that I've literally given thousands of authors over my 30 years on how to craft a book proposal that publishers will pay attention to. And I gave them a link to that page. And then I talked about, you know, getting a group of writers together and sharing information with one another and feedback. So I would write this as though I were going to give the best advice I could possibly give. Mm-hmm. And then here's the part that I love. You could do this a lot of ways. You could save each one of these in an Evernote note. You could save them. My favorite way, though, is not even that. Then you just like, if you did that, you then copy and paste from Evernote or Google Docs or whatever. My favorite way to do it is to save that response as an email signature. Now, when we think of email signatures, we typically think that's going to have, you know, sort of your sign off, thanks, comma, Michelle, what your position is, title, maybe something you're promoting, whatever. That's an email signature, right? Well, the truth is, it can be any amount of text you want. So what I would do is when I would get that response in the early days, when I was doing this all myself, I'd get that response from somebody or get an email request from somebody. And then I would just pick the email signature that answered that request. And I would customize it a little bit. Like I'd put in their first name. I might even, if I knew them or they were an acquaintance, that I would refer to something that made it feel warm and personal. Uh-huh. But guess what? Instead of that taking me 30 minutes or 20 minutes to write a well thought out response, it took me like 15 seconds. Total game changer.
This is gold. Right here, this one piece of advice is incredible. I mean, it could talk about shaving off time. I mean, that's just significant.
Oh, it saves so much time. And the thing about it is you gather these over a period of time. Uh-huh. And again, I start with the ones that are the most requested ones first, because that's going to save me the most time initially. Because if I can do the templated response, then I'm dealing with a whole swath of requests that are coming mm-hmm. in all in one fail swoop. And then I just work down. And occasionally you'll start getting a new request, but I'm always asking myself the question, do I think I may have to answer this again? And if so, I'm going to take a little extra time the first time to create another template so that when I get the request again, I can give them a very quick, very kind, very thoughtful response.
You know, what's been most helpful about this one step for me is that originally when I responded to all my emails myself, the templates really did help me respond more quickly. Now that I have an assistant that's helping with some of my emails, I was able to just add her to my Evernote folder, my Evernote shared notebook. I shared it to her. And so she has all of those responses now in her hands. And so she can make sure that it's communicating my heart very clearly when she responds on my behalf. And so it's just made it even more simple to communicate with her and then make sure people are being served really well through email.
Well, and what you're going to find too, as your organization grows, and it will grow, Michelle, is that you're probably going to want to move even from email to some simple help desk software.
Uh-huh.
And the one that we use, and I have no affiliate relationship, I probably should do that, but I don't have one, is Groove. And you can find out more about them at groovehq.com. But the cool thing about it is you're able to load in all those email templates so the people that are working with you and working for you can pull down a response and answer it in a way that you would be proud of, that would be as helpful as if you were answering it yourself.
I love that because I don't consider myself a micromanager at all, but when it comes to responses that are on my behalf, I'm very particular. I want them to communicate respect and consideration and all of that. So that's very important to me. And again, I think you said it was groovehq.com. We'll make sure we have that in the show notes as well. All right. So we are now on step number 6. We've gone through the first 5 of 7 on how you can become more accessible or become more successful by becoming less accessible. What is step number 6?
Step number 6 is to delegate to people you trust. This whole thing breaks down if you have to do it all yourself, or if you're going to delegate it to people that you don't really trust to represent you well, mm-hmm. and then you're going to pull it back.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Or you're going to say, ugh, I hate the way the person, you know, like for example, if you have an assistant that's working for you, and I know enough about you to know this is true, if their grammar is poor or they don't know how to punctuate, well, uh-huh. it reflects negatively on you. And, you know, or if they're curt or rude to people that are making requests. I used to have an assistant that was like that, but I didn't even know that was going on until a couple of my staff people came to me and said, do you have any idea how she's representing you? Because she is really rude. And I know that's not how you would want to be represented. Well, I had no idea. So you got to get people that you can trust. My executive assistant today's name is Susie. And Susie, you know, just from time to time, I'll have a reason to, you know, review an email that she's written. You know, maybe I'm in Groove looking at some of the responses mm-hmm. and I see where she's responded. And I just go, this is so amazing. She's so kind, so gracious. She can say no to somebody in the most kind way that they thank her.
I know Susie, and I've emailed with her and interacted with her. I heartily agree. I love Susie. She's fabulous.
Well, I get compliments all the time. But again, she is somebody that I can trust totally with my inbox, with phone messages. Here's the key. She's going to represent me mm-hmm. better than I represent myself.
Which is really a win. All right. So the point is you have to delegate, but you will only truly delegate if it's somebody you can trust. Because if you don't trust them fully, you will pull back. I've done that before where I passed it off to somebody and I didn't feel confident and I had to pull it back. So that's great piece of advice. This was step number 6, to delegate to people you trust. What is the final step to becoming less accessible?
Okay, this is a tough one. So fasten your seatbelt.
All right, I'm buckled in.
You got to accept the fact that you're going to be misunderstood.
Yeah, you're right. This is the hardest one for me. This is the one that I have such a hard time getting past.
Yep, and I will say this: it's going to be a lot less than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I kind of braced myself when I first started doing this. I thought, you know, people are not going to like this.
Yes.
And the fact is, most people, most rational people, most healthy people understand.
Well, and that's a good point. Most healthy people. And
that's key.
And I don't mean that as a criticism, because heaven knows I've had moments when I wasn't completely healthy myself in my responses. But it's really a matter of a healthy perspective on relationships and interactions. And healthy people have so much grace for the many reasons why you might not be able to respond.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And occasionally I will get somebody that misunderstands, and they'll say something just kind of, snide or cynical or something. And, I at least thought, I could get a response from you, or, mm-hmm. Why can't, or they'll really give Susie a hard time and they'll just say, I'd be really grateful if you'd pass this on to Mr. Hyatt, since I can't seem to get through you. It's that kind of mm-hmm. attitude, which, by the way, doesn't really help.
No, it doesn't.
Because what they demonstrate is that they live in a world where they don't really have any empathy. And in fairness to them, maybe they just have an extraordinary need and they just are desperate.
True.
And they're coming out of that place. True. So I want to be kind to that, but just accept the fact you're going to be misunderstood, and you can't go around trying to correct people's misunderstanding. Like I used to think, okay, well, if that person misunderstands me, then I got to give them the background. I got to give them the rationale for why I do this. You know what? I point him to a blog post that I wrote on this very same subject, and now I'll point him to the podcast, mm-hmm. and I'll say, here's why I do what I do. Mm-hmm. And if they don't accept that, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought, because the truth is that you're going to be misunderstood. And in those moments, I just so bad want to explain, or, I want them to understand yep. the various reasons and factors. But at the same time, them misunderstanding me, if I want them to at least be empathetic to the various unseen factors, I need to be empathetic to the various unseen factors that are affecting their misunderstanding. I know it sounds strange, but it's a give and take. And so that's been very helpful for me, to allow people to misunderstand, knowing that there could be things going on that I have no idea, and just let them deal with it.
Yeah. And I think the more secure we get ourselves and the more mature, mm-hmm. the more we realize that, we're okay. We don't have to have everybody's approval
True.
To be okay.
True. Yeah. True. Letting go of the need to manage or manipulate how other people feel. Letting go of that is a beautiful thing. And I've found that as I get older, that gets easier and easier to do. One more benefit of age.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
So as we conclude this episode, I just wanted to touch on a sticking point that I've wrestled with, but I know many of our listeners wrestle with as well, with this whole idea of saying no more and being less accessible. Our FOMO, our fear of missing out, increases pretty significantly. We're afraid that if we say no to this lunch appointment, or no to this interaction, or that endorsement, or this project, or whatever, that we're going to basically miss out on critical opportunities, that the door to opportunity will close forever and our business will be in the tank. So what would you say to that very real FOMO that goes on when it comes to this idea of being less accessible?
Well, it kind of goes back to what we discussed on a previous episode about abundance thinking. There's always more where that came from. Mm. And therefore we can afford to say no to opportunities, because there's always an opportunity. I had a boss in the publishing world where when occasionally we'd miss on signing a big author, maybe we got outbid by another mm-hmm. publisher, or just somebody that he connected or she connected with better from another publishing house. And he would always look at me and he'd say, there's always another deal. And it's true. We had a never-ending flow of deals, authors that wanted to get published. So, you miss a few, you win a few, but there's always more.
Well, if you want to be successful, the reality is that you and I have to become less accessible. It is just not scalable for us to save the world. It's not even possible. So Michael has delivered 7 great steps for you today, for both of us, on how we can become less accessible. And it is a process. It takes some time. The first step is to acknowledge your resources are finite. The second step, determine who needs access and who doesn't. The third step, take practical steps to limit your accessibility, such as email, Twitter, Facebook, phone. Fourth, make a list of common requests. This is a big game changer here. Make a list of common requests so that step number 5 You can decide how you will respond to those requests through templates and other kinds of responses that you can multiply and not have to do it individually each time. Step number 6, then delegate those responses to the people that you trust. So you're basically empowering them to respond on your behalf so that way you can be more focused in investing in those relationships and projects that are the most important. And then the final step is to accept the fact that you will be misunderstood. This is true in every aspect of life, not just in becoming more or less accessible in business. You will be misunderstood no matter what you do. So let's be intentional. Let's be healthy. Let's focus on the people and the projects that matter the most. Michael has given you great steps today, as well as permission to do exactly that. And even if you're misunderstood, the rewards for being less accessible is that you will be more successful in your personal and business life, which is what This Is Your Life is all about. Well, as we conclude today's episode, we want to let you know that you can get the show notes as well as a full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. But please do us a favor before you go today, will you? I promise it only takes 30 seconds or so. Head over to iTunes and rate this podcast. This is huge for us in terms of improving our ranking in iTunes and keeping the show visible so that other people can discover it. And thank you ahead of time for helping us out. Any final thoughts today, Michael?
Yeah, I would just say to people who are considering this for the first time and feeling a little uncomfortable, congratulations, you're normal. I think that affects everyone, and it continues to affect me at some level. But the great thing about it is that once you begin to implement some of the steps, some of the strategies we've shared today, you're going to have so much less stress. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel like you've got more margin in your life, more time for what matters most. And at the end of the day, I think that's crucial for us if we're going to lead well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Michael. And thank you, listener, for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life is a gift, a limited gift. Now go make it count.